All y'all.
We're recording?
I'll just post you.
We ready?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll call the Finance Committee meeting January 3rd to order. Item two, comments from the public.
Yeah, I have a comment. At one of these meetings, I think it was this meeting, there's some talk maybe about eliminating the, what is it, the bills paid listing from the board packet. That's not going to happen.
No, that's never been discussed.
Oh, okay.
That's a standard practice with public agencies of usually under the consent calendar for transparency. And I would not want to see that go away. That's a standard protocol.
Just a question about what that is. My understanding is you get all this money coming in, and basically that's all the money going out?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that go. So.
And the plan is to continue to have more come in than goes out.
Or an equal amount,
or
ideally.
An equal amount would be good.
Yes, is what we strive for.
Here, an equal amount would be good.
Yeah.
Where I come from, that would not be good. Okay. Item three, mid-year review. Tom, is this you?
This is me. At the board's request, we wanted to bring forward a mid-year review. And so we're going to take a little bit of time to go through it. But as you can see, we start off with a short memo where we're making some recommendations on moving some funds from one line item to another to make the budget appear to match reality now that we're 6 months into the year. And it has a lot to do with the fact that our vacancies has resulted in a large expense in temporary help. So full-time vacancies are in salaries. Temporary help comes out of what's called clerical services. And then we also have, because of our financial restructuring, entered into a couple agreements for consulting, financial consulting services that we did not anticipate actually about this time last year when we were just getting into familiarizing ourselves with how the budget had been being done in the past and trying to get it to go into a more normalized special district accounting process going forward. So, and I'm not exactly sure the mechanics, so I just kind of want to dive into this. We tried to highlight the lines that have material changes in it since the beginning of the year, or basically since the spring of last year. And you can see right off the bat, we're very conservative with all this. We're trying not to say, we really think we're going to make more than we are. But our year-to-date budget for residential charges is significantly above what it was when we thought it was going to be in the spring. And it's entirely due to adding those new homes. As you recall, or maybe not, when we did the budget, we were told that the new homes, there'd be 12 of them, and maybe a few in September, and the rest in probably April and May. So they've sold over 40 of them. So that's 40 new customers paying services every day, every month, and had been planned. So we're estimating conservatively that an increase in that line item of $40,000 makes sense. Or not, we're not going to change the budget, but that's where we're going to end up. Okay, we're not trying to change the bottom line of either the revenues or the expenses. We're leaving those as budget. Right. We're just reporting where we think we're going to end up. And then there's the question of why the commercial sewer is a little bit below the budget each month, or the sewer in general. And it's because when I built the budget, 10 months ago, I didn't have the knowledge I have today that when we lock off customers, that we don't charge them for their sewer fees. So there's a number of properties, 12 at any given time, that have their water turned off because the homes are for sale, people are long-term, they've left for a long time. So they're not getting charged, they just letting their water get locked off, so they're not getting charged sewer fees because no water coming out of the spigot and going into the sewer.
Right.
And so that, when we do the budget this year, we'll account for a certain amount of non-payment on premises, basically, because they're not paying their sewer bill.
Is that a standard industry practice? Like, I know a lot of places, your sewer fee is directly related to your water use. In other words, you get a percentage of your water consumption, either in dollars or units, is what they bill you for sewer. So in that case, if you turned everything off, you would obviously not get the sewer charge. Is it standard practice to not charge sewer to someone who shuts off their water and goes away for 3 months? So I'm not recommending we do it. I'm just curious to know the answer.
The only answer I have for that is I don't know if it's a standard practice, but I do know it's an allowable practice under the rules of 218.
Okay.
So we could continue to charge sewer to accounts that we lock off, but according to my knowledge, which comes from the former accounting supervisor, the district code doesn't allow us to continue charging sewer if we lock off their water.
Okay.
It's one of those things on the list that was, if we had time, we might dive into it and come back to the board and make a recommendation that we're giving away about $450 a month for these 10, 12 units being not charged sewer, and Paul has.
Just the only district that I'm aware of that actually does it, like you said, is El Dorado Irrigation District, because they're one entity that provides all those services. Within Sacramento County, there's the Sac Area Sewer District, and they got multiple departments, so they're not in contact with the various water agencies that supply the water, so that's typically not the case.
Do we not still have obligation for maintenance of the sewer system, even though somebody chose one way or the other, either not pay the bill or lock it off? Do we still assume responsibility for that and have to maintain it?
Yep.
Then the answer to me would be we are billing for that, because the maintenance, the whole process doesn't go away. Now, if you choose to notify us and do all those things, maybe that's the caveat, and we can adjust our maintenance schedule, et cetera, et cetera. But short of that, we still own the responsibility of maintaining it, whether that revenue is coming in or not. Mm-hmm. So to me, that would be my thought process, that irrespective of what you're doing, we still have a mission and responsibility of maintenance.
It would have to be that component of whatever we charge that's
correct.
For maintenance.
Correct.
And not
now
the
question. Right.
The
so the question I would have is, as we move forward to that, is it more labor intensive from administrative to try and figure that out, and is it then worth it?
Yeah. Now, how much work do you have to do?
Now, we will know from whatever the study comes out and what our fees are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We should have a better idea. So then that puts us in the ballpark of where we're at. Now, is $450 a month a make or break? The answer is no. But again, it's that if we have a responsibility and a resident chooses to make a decision, I appreciate them making that decision. It doesn't remove our obligation for what we have to maintain for that portion of the sewer system. So that's just my thought process.
Just to be clear, if somebody goes away, the townhouse would be I could never turn my water off, because if I go away, I still got landscaping I got to take care of. But if you're in a townhouse and you turn your water off and you go to Palm Springs for 3 months, you're still, if you turn it off, you're still getting charged a sewer fee, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
You're still getting charged sewer, trash, but they may turn off their trash for 6 months at a time. I don't know about that, but I do know that if there's no water usage, they're still getting charged sewer. They don't get charged sewer if their property is locked off. So if you're selling your house,
you know
the smart thing to do, if you know it's going to be on the market for a year, just let your water get locked off,
mm-hmm. And then, of course, unless you're worried about killing your landscaping. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
The reality is, the whole thing, the whole practice of shutting off, whether it's garbage or water or sewer or whatever, doesn't make much sense, because almost always they get used at some point outside of the period that they're supposed to be off.
Correct.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a need for garbage. You want the garbage to sit there for 6 months while someone's not there at their property?
Right.
So if we're going to err, I would recommend we err on the side of requiring payment.
I would agree.
Keep the service on.
Just because we have a responsibility of maintenance, et cetera, of everything that's going on. Like I said, we don't need to make a decision. I think as we go into the new budget cycle, we'll have some more information on the fee structure, some of those other things, and we just take a look at it. Last thing I want is for it to cost $500 a month for administrative fee to try and collect $450.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It ain't worth it.
We'll look at that.
Okay.
Well, the other interesting part of this, down the road too, if you're looking at the increase in new homes as the cause of the residential income increase. Mm-hmm. I'd at some point be interested in knowing, you know, basically we're selling water, which has no cost of goods. So it should, you know, I'm just curious at what point, how much of that just drops right through to the bottom? In other words, how much of doing business with each new individual house? What's the cost of that? In other words, I can't assume totally that we took on 40 new houses, so we've got $100 in revenue. So what does it cost us to do business with those 40 houses?
You mean incrementally, what does
incrementally,
it cost?
It's not, it's, they're variables, okay, that if there are none, then all every bit of that revenue we collect is gonna go right to the profit line, to the bottom line. But I'm just interested at some point in, it should wash, shouldn't it? If we're trying to break even here,
yeah,
it should all
you
in
have
the
administrative
end,
costs
wash.
You have administrative right. costs you right. have the treatment of or the you know delivery of the water and filtration of the water and electrical costs, chemical costs, labor costs
right.
related to that. That right. all should be what I mean that's what
so it should incrementally for. Be equal to whatever the revenue is, correct?
Correct.
Well at some point I mean
expenditures plus a reserve component that might be part of those costs.
Yeah, it's complicated formulas, but every time a property changes hands, we collect $150. That covers what is considered to be our cost of the right. transaction.
Right.
But it's at some point, you know, you'll start making money, and then you'll trigger the point where you have to increase the size of the water treatment plant. Or at some point, because of there's right. extra use of the system, that you have to do more repairs or more replacement of filters.
Well, that's just why like I was that. Interested in the number. You know, I'm just curious that, you know, well, we're way ahead now, but incrementally, what does it mean that we've added 40 houses? I mean, could it conceivably be that adding those 40 houses dragged the bottom line down?
It may just be, it may, you know, in that, you know, we say way ahead. I mean, when you look at the overall percentage of that dollar amount versus the overall budget for the
mm-hmm.
year,
yeah,
it's not that significant of a dollar amount. And so, that's when you look at, you know, our rates at the set at the proper level to accommodate what our expenditures are each year. And
okay.
that's right. where as we get this stuff nailed down a little bit more and our staff more familiar with how all of our financials are operating, then we'll have a real good picture to start to fine-tune basically our budgets
yeah.
each year.
I remember when you're in the ballpark here of 40 houses is getting
yeah.
4,000 a month, give or take.
And one thing we want to make real clear is where the government differs from the private sector is we have to budget for what may be our ultimate cost that year.
Oh, it's, absolutely.
To say that you're going to always land exactly on that budget amount.
No.
We have to anticipate what our needs are for that year and identify that as our budget for that year. Because, and you've heard this from me before, we don't have lines of credit that we draw from if we happen to have something occur. We have to accommodate that in our budget each year.
Yeah.
So oftentimes you will see a little bit of excess at the end of the year, just so that buffer was there to accommodate what was potentially expected for that year.
Okay,
and then in the next line, you know, we're anticipating, the next line of interest is we're anticipating coming in high, you know, over budgeted for more revenue than planned with interest. And so then the next two line items deal directly with the home sales, the number of meter installation fees and the number of meter inspection fees, because again, we had 12, we're over 40 already. Title transfer fees. And there's more home selling around here. I don't know if you guys noticed more home mm-hmm. for sale signs up. You know, even behind the gates, there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that activity is really busy. And then our project reimbursement, and that's because we've been doing a lot of work with development more than we had planned. And so that's the revenue. So we're anticipating revenue coming in significantly higher to the tune of about $95,000 than budgeted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now moving on to wages. This is, you know, we're talking about adjusting expense allocation. So we had budgeted for 2.5 million in wages. That's right in the center of the page, the annual budget going down, 2.495.
Right.
And we're projecting for the rest of the year about 1.35, which is going to put us 164,000 under planned expenditures on wages.
Yeah, that would make sense with the couple vacancies that we've had.
Yeah, we've had one vacancy the entire year. We're just hiring now, the officer and the operator in training, and retirements create vacancies.
Correct.
And then that, of course, rolls also into the pension expense, not being what it was planned to be. And then clerical services, that's, you know, our temp agency folks who've been, we've been brought in to support the controller, the retired district secretary,
correct,
AKA Amelia, and the accounting supervisor vacancy. So that's a significant amount. And then, you know, just a turnover as people leave, we need to fill the vacancies in security and patrol as well. And then, you know, if, as you go down the list, nothing really material until you hit legal and consulting. And legal isn't as high as we thought it was, and we don't anticipate it to be. Even with the water rights work being done, it's not, that's not legal expense so much. And then the consulting, of course, we're anticipating that to be significantly higher. And then turning the page, I wanted to call out the vehicle maintenance because we've been spending a lot of money fixing the patrol Jeeps. And Jeff could talk about it through frustration, but you know, back in the day when we bought those two Jeep Cherokees or Jeep, whatever they are, that was the cheapest thing we could find. And it's starting to bear fact that when you buy cheap, you end up with lots
of repairs.
How many
do we have total?
Of the Jeeps?
Yeah.
Two.
And they're both on leases, and they both have some time to go. So one of them, we're doing a $2,500 worth of radiator and water pump related work of lately, and now they're saying the main seal is bad.
Right. The head gasket
is bad.
They're tearing it down to check the head.
Okay.
So, for future references, maybe spend a little bit more time
or something.
buying the right vehicle for this type of work, because these cars are running all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want them to run all the time, day in and day out. You want them to be busy. Okay. And then the maintenance and repairs, there's been a lot of large repair items over the past few months, and they're very necessary. The lift stations in the south are both under duress, and we have rental lift stations in there right now. There's been some large pumps being replaced and so on and so forth. And I put over here, evaluate for potential reserve expense. And we may decide to just say, we'll just leave it that. But we are currently now looking at major expenditures going through the process that we talked about at the board, whereby Paul makes a recommendation that Mark approves it, and then we have a process where we charge it against like reserve replacement fund.
Well, that would be my question. I mean, that's gonna be a call that we have to make at some point. Is it maintenance and repairs, or is it a capital expense that it's a life of the pump, or we didn't anticipate, you know, it breaking, but it's now a capital improvement?
And it's going to have to be a call. And so what I did is I reached out to a colleague of mine I've known for years. He's the head of the Elk Grove Water District and also was a utilities director at a city. And I asked him, I said, so how do you guys account for operational versus capital costs each year? And they have a set aside budget for operational repairs. They purposely set a fairly good sized budget, knowing that just some things break, you don't expect it, and you're going to have those costs. So to have both components makes sense.
Would it make sense to have it, like, from Paul's standpoint, whatever you're going to do to pump number one, if it exceeds a specific amount of dollars, could you treat it as a reserve versus an expense or vice versa?
Yeah, our program our policy states that if it's over $5,000 that it can roll into that program. But in all honesty, it all kind of washes out, because if you're under your operating maintenance budget on that, you're going to just roll that excess into reserves anyway. Yeah. So it's, you know.
Well, and I don't disagree with that from a financial standpoint, but from a planning standpoint, then our capital improvement plan has to be updated. Does that make sense?
That's
so
true.
We replaced pump one. Mm-hmm. It's out of operational expense this year, no big deal, life's good.
Sure.
But now, on the big picture, down the road, do I still account for that, or did I just pick up a 15-year life on that pump? That's a bigger decision back here than the finance side of the house. I agree with you.
I believe that would be an updating of the asset program.
Right.
So
right.
That's where you change that useful life.
Correct. Because then that changes our target for what we don't know to know on what a reserve should be.
Yeah, and looking at a five-year rolling balance,
right.
If we rebuild the two pumps in the south,
right.
the two lift stations, right. Individually, they're probably $40,000, $50,000 lift stations. Am I close, Paul? Okay. So
right.
if we
But that puts us into exactly what I'm talking about.
If
Got
we
it.
Spend $15,000 rehabbing it, and we've added 20 years to the life or 10 years to the life, that needs to be
correct.
At a minimum accounted for in the fixed asset process,
correct.
But it really should be a reserve replacement or reserve repair type expense.
Yeah.
So we're getting there.
Okay.
We're really getting close to that. So I just wanted to call that out. And again, we haven't spent any of the $36,000 we budgeted for non-routine maintenance and repairs. And that's also money that we could look for doing some of those expenditures.
Right. And I think either way, at the end of the day, the intent of the board, and please jump in, John, is we want the item fixed. And that's why the authority went. Now, if we need to come back a board meeting or two later and go, hey, we've now made the decision, it's going to be capital reserve, those kind of things, then we go through that paperwork end of it, but we got the issue fixed. Does that make
right.
sense?
Okay. And he can fix it when it's,
right.
when it's breaking and not right. after it's broken through an emergency board
correct.
Meeting.
Now, what I don't know is, do we want to put it all towards the end of the year and have it as you get a better picture? So come, say, April, May, hey, we're going to move these items because looking at the budget, the work that's been done, is it better to group it all in at one shot than it is to kind of piecemeal it throughout the year? That's your call. I don't know if there's an advantage one way or the other. And staff would have to tell us which way it works to be advantageous.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Just make sure we're thinking the same thing or echoing what you just said. If you want to reconcile it on a six-month basis,
right.
I particularly don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever works. Like he said, fix the pump and then, okay, you fixed it. So this one cost $10,000 and that one cost $38. Allocate the money the way you guys
well, or I mean, wouldn't it be like an end of year reconciliation?
And it very well could be.
Month 13, what we're talking
yeah.
about.
Well, but period 13, that's a kind of a different
you don't
thing.
Want to do that?
No, my preference would be that we take a minute to look at what we spent thus far this year mm-hmm. and possibly move some of those large line items into mm-hmm. the reserve expenditure and then also update the fixed asset. But on an ongoing basis, if we have two things, if you know these lift stations, if they get rehab, that's a reserve expenditure.
Right.
And I prefer to have Paul put in a request to Mark. I recommend this be a reserve right. that Mark approve it.
Right.
And then we come back to the board the following month and say the following
right.
expenses were approved to be under the manager's authority as a reserve expenditure. I'd rather see that have an ebb and flow. Versus one
that's your
thing
call.
At the end.
That is your call.
Can I say something about this? This has been bothering me for a long time. So the common practice and best practice is we should based on the fixed asset policy, there's supposed to be a threshold. Anything over that threshold mm-hmm. they shouldn't even come through what we call here, the operational expenses, mm-hmm. P&L,
Right.
It should just automatically book to the clearing, fixed asset clearing site, GL account. Then we monitor that account, we know how much we spend on the reserve and fixed assets. But we still should have a reasonable budget
right.
for
I agree.
The normal maintenance.
So would that then, do you think, should call for a higher threshold dollar to move it into this,
5,000,
the reserves?
Okay,
10,000? So, yeah, because if we set aside an operational budget,
mm-hmm.
but we always exceed it, that's what my concern is.
And then that's kind of where
kicks
we're at right
into
now.
Reserves.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
maybe we need to relook at what that threshold is so that we actually have a reason to spend the operational
right,
dollars as operational.
Yes, I would
yeah,
say,
it might be easier.
How much do you think it would be a reasonable threshold?
I think maybe around 10.
Yes,
it's a nice round number.
Yes. Anything over 10 should automatically go to balance sheet. Don't even show up in here.
Okay.
Then we should change our internal practices that we have account codes
mm-hmm.
that we can, through the Estiva system, move forward on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's been a problem with my side, is that we need to get these things fixed.
Yeah.
You know, what's
right.
the authority so we can move forward?
But
so.
We do need to also monitor the clearing GL account, and maybe it should grow into a formal capital asset budget itself on top of this operational budget.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that at all.
So
yeah.
Cindy, is that what you just said? Is that creating a specific reserve account for that? Is that what you said?
No, we already have that GL coding.
Right.
It's called fixed asset clearing. This is before we spread it out by the year and to a specific fixed asset account. We just park them there.
Right.
Just to monitor the spending.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And if, yeah, obviously if we need to modify policy
mm-hmm.
and yeah. Again, you understand the direction the board wants. We want it at staff level to get done. If it falls out of that, then you know we obviously have means to address that. But otherwise, it's off and moving. And if we're going to do a mid-year review all the time and we're monitoring it anyways, you know, I feel comfortable with that. So if it's a change in policy and especially a dollar amount, then we can bring it to the board. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be at the next meeting because it's working right now, but to line up for the next fiscal year, if that's what we want to do, however staff wants.
Yeah. We make some rate classes, you know, after this meeting
mm-hmm.
or a board meeting, we can show you a more realistic picture for this maintenance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then just to finish it off, a couple things on chemicals in the lab. The chemicals they're running high right now, but according to Paul, that's pretty good. I mean, it kind of mellows out after a while. So we're leaving that as budgeted, given all the work we've done with the manganese. It's kind of
sure.
It's kind of drawn out that, but we're good on the chemicals. We budgeted that well, and the manganese has created our lab test budget to go a little bit overboard. We're not recommending moving any allocation into the lab test line item because it's very clearly identified as related to the manganese problem. So what we are requesting, and we kind of went around on the best, you know, the proper way to do this, but I think what happens is we ask the committee to approve our recommendations and that we bring to the board some level of a memo that says the committee recommends that we adjust the budgeted, not the bottom line, but the budgeted amount for these four accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So we're recommending that we move $105,000 out of salaries and wages and move them into clerical services. And then, you know, of course, four full-time people leave, and we have to hire four full-time clerical people, there will be a period 13 adjustment for that. We're recommending that we take some of the pension expense excess budgeted amount and move it into the consulting line item. And then you see the clerical services there. And then we're recommending that some of the legal funds that were over budgeted at this point, we move also those into consulting. So if you do the math, that all works out.
Right.
I should have put some totals down there. But so that's our recommendation for the committee. And then with your approval, we'll turn it into a board memo.
Okay. I'm fine with it.
Me too.
But yeah, put some totals just so they can see money in, money out.
Make sure the totals.
Right. And it's just line items that we're moving. We're not moving. So.
Correct.
Yeah. What in your terminology for period 13, tell me how you would use it and what you got in mind.
What a period 13 allows you to do is once the end of June hits, you can basically close the books and do a June report. And then you can have a year-end preliminary report. And period 13 allows for all this stuff that was committed to in May and June that didn't actually get expended until July and August. So it allows for, during a end-of-year audit period, for you to take items that you approved and you ordered and you, in some cases, took receipt of in June and pay for them in July, but count them towards
right,
June fiscal
okay.
year. Nothing's more obvious than the Prop 84 grant,
right.
for which we had to do everything by June 30th.
Right.
June 30th, but we ended up actually processing bills well into August and maybe even September.
Right.
But on a profit and loss statement for any given fiscal year, you'd like to be able to say, okay, this belongs here. The practice here has been, well, that's it. Now everything goes to this fiscal year.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make sense from a proper governmental budgeting standpoint.
No, I agree.
Yeah, so your period 13 is an adjustment period.
Correct.
It's
right.
I mean, I've worked.
It's not a 13-month calendar.
Yes, CBS, I worked for years on it, which I loved. We could never explain that here.
I would say period 13 has nothing to do with your budget
correct.
Process.
Correct.
And you should always mentally separate your
right.
budget process with audit.
Correct.
And because every accountant will show the management and the budget actuals after June 30th and to tell you how much money we spend,
right.
then we do adjustment for compliance purposes.
Correct.
To make the financial report compliant with GAAP.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. We need to move something from expenses into balance sheet. Prepaid, fixed assets that need to be moved and adjusted. But it has like little to do with your budget.
Got it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
At no point would a single year project turn into a multi-year project during this period.
Now, if it's a multi-year project, it'll stay a multi-year project.
Understand. But we're take the Prop 84 or something like that. Hey, maybe we got to throw more money at it. Now it becomes a two-year project. If it's not budgeted for, I would say it. It is what it is, and if the board needs to meet and make some decisions,
action.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay,
good with it.
Okay,
so you got $113,000 ejection excess in there.
Yes, and we erred on the side of. Very, very conservative.
So as an overall budget, that's about 1.5%, 1.6.
Yeah,
something.
I mean, if we're within 3 or 5%,
I would like to put it in the context
of
the overall.
Somebody will come to the microphone and want you to divvy up the 113 by 2600.
And none of this goes,
people.
As I always like to say, none of this goes to a pizza party or anything like that. If there's anything left over, it goes into reserves.
Never go to a pizza party. We would always go to executive bonuses.
we don't have those here. So. All right. Next.
You ready to move on?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me go back to page one. Budget schedule. Which is in here.
So I'll speak to it.
Okay, go ahead, Dad.
Yeah, this is just an update to the budget schedule. It includes the board goal setting meeting, and then also we initially on a schedule had the board budget workshop, at the end of January, and that didn't really make sense given when we're going to do our board goals workshop. So we're looking now to push that back into mid-late February. And that has been the more traditional time. If there is a budget workshop held for the board, it's usually in that period.
So we're going to get rid of the 23rd meeting of January?
No, it's different. So okay. The board goals is setting the overarching goals of the organization.
Okay.
And then there's the budget workshop, which is kind of just talking Perfect. About the big ticket items that we're expecting that year, kind of a right. preview of the budget, if you will.
Okay.
And yeah, I think from what I understand, that budget workshop, there's been years where it has or has not been held. It's not, you know, sometimes it's the first hearing of the budget that's where we go over all this stuff. But it doesn't hurt to have a preview, basically, of the right. of the major budget itself, and that's what that purpose of that meeting is.
Then I would probably say this would be a good example, because it's going to fall in Paul's shop and what you were talking about on how we're going to set up the new approach to what is our operating expense, what does that mean, mm-hmm. some of the dollar issues, what it falls into, and then how are we going to then monitor if we say it's capital replacement type of thing. It'd be a good time to kind of educate the board on, and then if we have any other potentially policy changes coming up for the budget, I would say you throw it in that meeting. Not that I need it, but you're telling us so that's
the direction we're going.
And it can be rolled into the budget itself, all the policies. I'm okay with that, so we don't have to cause a whole lot of work, but what you see to change, I would say you throw it into that meeting mm-hmm. for us. That way it gives the board plenty of time to, are we comfortable with it? If not, what do we do? And then just, it's part of the budget package, and we just move forward.
The other part, I don't know where you want to have the discussion about reserves and how they factor into the average bill and everything else that we're going to go through
here. The board budget workshop, we could do.
Yeah, because I'm okay at the moment, but I'm kind of looking for at some point to get a little bit more of a fix on what it really looks like and how much we should be allocating, and you know, it comes down to ultimately picking a number.
Right. Are we going to have the number from the consultant group on fees?
The cost allocation numbers, yes.
So we'll have it for that this meeting?
Maybe not the workshop, but definitely before the Prop 218 notice, because that's okay. going to factor in how we develop mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm.
And so I would use that meeting, even if we have some preliminary stuff on that, and then what John was talking about, that would be where I would throw in some of the budget workshop stuff. Just here's the stuff, here's the range. Obviously, as we get closer, then yeah. here's what we know to be true.
Now, we absolutely owe you the reserve discussion by the time we get to March. I mean, we're on track to be able to do that, but we absolutely owe you that. So when you do go out and say, this is what we're doing with fees for 2021, that we have something we can put our foot on that makes sense.
Right, and the only way I in my mind that we could pitch that going out is ultimately we're trying to get to a number that tells us, for lack of a better way to say it, we're 23% reserved mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. globally.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm making these numbers up, but
right.
but we, and then the next discussion we have is we're 23 and maybe we feel as an interim step we need to go to 40, 35.
Right.
Okay, and then you tell us on a per bill basis or give us a number, what does that cost each individual ratepayer?
Right. Correct.
And, you know, if it's an overwhelming number, then maybe we have another discussion and maybe, well, 40 would be nice, but maybe we'll incrementally take it up to 35.
Right.
Or maybe we got 250 grand here at the bottom at the end of the year that we can toss in there, and as a consequence of tossing it in there, lower the percentage and consequently lower each ratepayer's contribution. over the next year. So, I, you know.
And I don't have a problem with that either way. My only concern is we have a bad year, and if we were banking on that 250, we've used that 250 in operating expenses, not even really getting to, you know, the capital improvement type stuff.
But at the end, you know, you either do or you don't have the 250.
Right.
So if you've had a discussion and the board has a consensus that we're going to go to 35%, well, if we got to 250, then the individual contribution is still less because
we know as of the 2015 study generally where we were. It was 15% or
was
something.
Not good.
But
I'm willing to concede, and I read that damn thing, that there's stuff in there that probably can be refined, and there's stuff in there we didn't need. There, you know, transmission towers for bygone technology and all kinds of stuff that if that thing was cleaned up, it would be a higher number.
Right.
But it's still not going to be a great number. I can tell you it's not going up to the 50s or 60s or 70s. It's not going up there.
Then we might have new items such as stormwater treatment facilities and other new mandates that come down the pike that we are going to have to allocate reserves for in the future. So could be, I'm not going to say it's a wash, but there's going to be other factors that may increase it in other areas too.
Yeah. Because we had a couple of points in our history where we did some public education, which was not well received, but we did it, that, you know, we have a finite number of ratepayers that, you know, through history has never really seriously gone up here since we built the South. And everything else has gone up except the number of ratepayers, and you're amortizing that, you're just dividing those two numbers, and that's your share. I mean, and until we get that growth, we're going to continue to face that problem. And one of the ways we faced it over time is to pinch it on the reserves. Age old, you know, well, be a hero, no rate increase, and don't collect any money for reserves.
Yeah,
and eventually that kicks you in the ass.
And it ends up hurting the public in the long run. So, you know, it's from a...
Nobody wants you out there bouncing this thing up by 20% in any given year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are much more receptive to your going your two or three and over 5 years, so nobody gets a giant surprise at some point.
Yeah.
So that's the philosophy. I mean, we just have to kind of throw some numbers in there and start dealing with the reality.
Another thing to possibly discuss is that, you know, as we discussed prior, that the drainage is fixed to that 2% a year, and showing with the, you know, the Engineering News Review Index, I mean, it's been more than 2% a year for a long time now. So, and then we've got these additional mandates upon us that it may need to go out to vote or something again. It's just, it's not keeping up.
Well, the two elephants, that's one elephant. The other one is security.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and you know, they've been elephants for years, and we with these, I have an analysis that I think I even gave it to you at some point. We did years ago, and we have been perfectly on target because our security budget is virtually what it was when we did that analysis, because you can't go wrong if it's only going up 2% a year. I mean, you know, so those numbers are not reality anymore. They're just not. And if the only way to get the money for drainage and security is to have this discussion, then well, when do you want to have it?
Yeah, and then we have the expenditure on the election that would occur. And then my larger concern is that obligations, you know, to sell it to the increase, that we portray it in such a way that it over-obligates us, and then we're behind the eight ball the minute we get the increase.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to provide all these extra great services to you, but are we really just playing catch-up with what was underfunded in the past? And so there's a balance there. We just want to be careful with the message to not oversell it, basically, even in our attempt to say, hey, this is just to keep us even keel, maybe expand a little bit. But
I wouldn't even presume to make that argument. Yeah. I mean, we're just keeping up. You're keeping up overall, even in the world we live in with inflation as it's been. I mean, you're at 2%. You're just keeping up.
And the alternative is to cut services. and we'd have to look at that. Can't really do it on the drainage side so much as...
midge flies.
Yeah.
Weed whacking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. The security side is where, you've mentioned it not as a proposal, but just the universe out there is, do you reduce, during the day, have it be the gatehouses without officers in the gatehouses, or during evening, do we adjust our practices from
you can even start that conversation with what it will cost us, projecting what it will cost us to maintain the existing level of service.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, we're not talking about adding another car. We're not talking about adding another gate. We're not talking about adding another officer. We're talking about status quo here.
Correct.
And over the next 5 years, and we're talking about a long-term bond issue perhaps, or tax, depending on what item it is, this is what it will cost to maintain a level of service. And you can either pay for that status quo, or we can continue to charge you what we charge you and dial back what we provide.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are really the hard, those are the hard answers. I mean, that's what it is. It's 5 pounds of material in a 10-pound bag. Or vice versa.
Vice versa.
Okay.
So the next item is the CFD 2014-1 outstanding delinquencies. And so we had some discussions on this. We'd just be checking in to see if there had been payments made on the delinquencies out there. So as part of this discussion, it's really important to know that when you see a number, and we provided a worksheet, went through the county website, and anybody can do this. You can go to the county property tax.
Right.
It's listed at the bottom of the page here, eproptax.sackcounty.net. You can input a parcel, and you can see what type of obligations are owed on that parcel. And what's really critical is it'll say that if there's outstanding taxes are due, there's now a big red exclamation point set aside. You can click through to see what the total obligation that's required for that particular parcel. The website provides a whole bunch of information. It, even though it's great, it's a lot of information, it's still not fully comprehensive. It won't show all the detail of every last delinquency, every last amount owed. It'll just give you a summary of, if this parcel were to come current, this is what it would cost, what has to be paid as of, I think the last date that it was due was the 19th of December or something.
Right.
If paid by December 19th, this is what's owed on this. But that includes other costs. So there's CFD levies that are on those parcels. There's CSD, delinquent utility payments, separate from the CFD, that have been placed on the county rolls and eventually will fall into teeter if they're not paid in that first year. You have fire district assessments. These are fairly small assessments. Mm-hmm. And then also Sacramento Water Agency, they did a study for the area that was assessed to all the parcels in the entire county, likely. And that's an assessment that you see on these parcels, too. So understand that when you see this dollar amount, it includes all of that. That said, a majority of this is the CFD obligation and penalties and the delinquencies on utilities. One thing I always stress as we have this discussion, and for whatever reason it was put there in the bond covenants for CFD, for the Community Facilities District, there was a statement in there signed by all parties agreeing to it that as long as the CFD obligations fell into the county's teeter, that those are not to be considered delinquencies. It's written into the covenants. And so
wasn't that nice?
It was very strategic, whoever put that language in there. They probably anticipated using this as essentially a funding mechanism for other purposes, and we're just willing to accept the 18% per year or whatever the penalty was per year. But that was written into the covenants itself.
Just as a side note.
And so even NBS, who helps us manage the CFD, there are, what do you call them? Their function, they're the...
They're the bond oversight.
Yeah, they understand that. I mean, we have an annual letter that we have to sign and all that, and reminded them this year that, you know, by the way, you're saying that these are going into default and foreclosure. You got to read the bond document. The bond document says that it's considered delinquent. And the county, and we had this discussion at a public meeting,
right.
Another public meeting where we discussed that, you know, the county's got $1 billion in assessments, and right. this is a small amount.
Right.
The county has not indicated any concern about continuing the TEETR program, continuing right. to accept these properties into TEETR. They have not communicated anything to us as, hey, we're not going to, you know, TEETR these year.
Right.
I mean, financially, if your delinquency rate is 3%, 4%, 5%,
yeah.
and you can make horrendous amounts of money
yeah.
on that 5%, which yeah. they're doing.
Yeah.
It's probably, from a financial standpoint, I mean, they're fine. They're happy guys.
Yeah. Well, they're paying 18%, though, yeah. which is, you know, that's a pretty high
yeah, right.
penalty that they're
right.
paying each year.
So
that's a high cost of money.
Yeah.
So I'd rather get my money somewhere else, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think they have a lot of confidence that they'll be able, a few things, there's a few be able to flip those parcels to a developer and
right.
have them absorb whatever
exactly.
that residual cost was. And then the other thing is that as these parcels are developed through the rest of the CFD obligations, which such as the Marietta Garden 78, you just took each of these parcels now is worth about $400,000 as they sell these homes. You now have millions and millions of dollars of assessed value
right.
that gets shifted away from those, or at least it dilutes the,
right.
the overall pool of cost
right.
to pay back the CFD.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost on the outlying properties actually starts to go down over time as these other parcels are developed, the overall cost.
Yeah.
Now, that all said, I had the discussion with John Sullivan about 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, and I said, where are you guys on paying this stuff back? You've talked about, you know, you've got all this development going, you're being reimbursed for projects that you've started. He said that they were planning to sit down with the county at the end of the year and start talking about paying down these parcels. Now, one thing that Tom mentioned is that on the utility delinquencies, on our, you know, payments to us, basically, that gets placed under the county rolls, that their October payments, they did come current on their October payments. Now, that doesn't mean that there were outstanding items from prior years and prior terms that are now on TEETR and on the county rolls. They're still there, and they're part of this $1.5 million that you see as the overall obligation. But as far as coming current on the most recent assessments, they have paid their fees to
so
the CSD.
From July 4th, they're paying their bills.
Yeah, which they hadn't been before.
So. And he obviously has paid something because, well, he was always current on his south of 16.
Whatever he was actively developing, he was current.
Right. And,
yeah,
and
it's amazing how that works.
Had he not paid something in my calculations from the, we did this 6 months or a year
yeah.
ago, I don't know. He would have been closer to $2 million.
Yes, he actually.
So he paid something.
When we were looking at the prior assessments, he had been paying a small fraction on each one. So just to show some progress towards payments, and maybe that's something you made a deal with the county to say, yeah, you know, as long as I show some good faith, are you gonna?
Yeah. Well, the other parts, I asked at the county when I was down there. Couple of months ago, I asked the question, do you guys process development applications for people who owe you property taxes? And the answer was kind of laughable because nobody knew. Huh? Yeah, well, and one answer I got was, oh, well, the guys that actually collect the money, they're in the other building over there, and we're over
yeah,
here.
Yeah. And they don't have access to the computer.
And,
to
you know, that was one of the answers I got. And the other one was, well, you know, if they're paying the fees,
I can tell you when I was at Stockton, we would, if we knew a parcel was in bankruptcy, we would take another look at it. But we still were obligated as long as they're paying the fees. Because what happens is that land is collateral.
Right. And mm-hmm. you're now
it's ultimately
making money.
Collateral.
So to me, the answer from the county, from my historical perspective, has always been, yes, we will develop it.
because now I'm getting revenue from you, and yes, you are going to pay me back taxes.
Yeah. So. And then it's at that transaction, that title company clears it all out at that point, whatever delinquency.
And they come to the new payment schedule, all that stuff, it happens right then and there. Yeah, the county's always done that.
I wouldn't try this as a personal property owner.
No, I mean, that's...
I wouldn't try this in your own home.
I would LLC yourself before you do it, okay?
Yeah. It's a little risky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But we also know that they acquired those lands at a pretty low cost.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And so it was built into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So that's just an update to you. There is River Valley Times is going to has been talking to us about an article. So I wanted to give you an update so that you're not hit out of left field, basically, with kind of an update where things are. Whether or not... the developer follows through with the county and starts paying on this, we have no idea.
Right.
I mean, just because we're told that there's some progress doesn't mean we're going to see it.
The only thing I would ask on your comment there, Mark, is just make sure the board president and the other board members, hey, FYI, or however you want to notify the rest of the board that an article's coming out and either support it or don't support it, but we provided this information. Just let especially the board president know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we need to have conversation in the board meeting about it to antagonize anybody. It is what it is.
I mean, we'll have a discussion on it at some point.
Oh yeah, as soon as it hits
we get around to our year end teeter approvals. Showing up there.
I think we do have an obligation. I've gotten called by individual bondholders.
I agree
on this, asking about so what's going on here. If we don't see movement, if he's telling us that there, because ultimately, yes, the land is the backstop for this, but this is also a CFD bond that we administer, and we do have obligations.
I agree.
Have to review this. My signature is on documents. So the last thing, and I know you're not saying this, but I do think there's times that we do need to make sure this is out there in the public and maybe
aware of.
There's no progress. They're not paying on this.
Right.
The amount of administrative work that it causes us, the very fact that we're having this discussion right now is costing us resources.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the public needs to know that that's the result of someone not meeting their obligations to their, obviously it's to their benefit.
Right.
But there's a cost to, and this is society right here.
Right.
By not meeting that obligation. So, so is your recommendation not to move this to the board right now and just notify them, or?
No, you can. That's fine. I say move it to the board. I was just talking about the article.
Oh, the article.
Yeah. President's aware.
Okay. I do want to provide the update to the board, just so that they know.
Yeah, and that's
so we'll give them the same caveat of, there's not much we can do about it. It's pretty transparent what's going on here.
But. And if the board wants details, then when it comes to the teeter approval timing, then that's when that discussion, we can move it to them. So that's fine.
I want to interrupt for really quick. When the board approves what you call the teeter, it's not teeter. We're taking delinquent utility bills and putting them on the tax roll.
Thank you.
Historically, it's always been called teeter.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you need to keep correcting us every time.
Well, there's two things though that there's the CFD 2014-1. What Tom's talking about is delinquent utility bills.
Right.
Where they haven't paid us directly.
Right.
So and both can eventually get to teeter.
Correct. So we chose to take whatever it was. Like 400,000, 600,000 this year in delinquent utility bills for these properties, and we chose to transfer that liability to the county to be put on the county tax roll. When we do that, we take that amount and we make it a receivable in the accounting system.
Mm-hmm.
And so their account balances go from being 600,000 in arrears, for which we charge interest and penalties every month, to being zero. And so come July 1, his accounts are, August 1, his accounts had a zero balance. So when he got his July bill and he paid it, he showed that company current. Showed as being current. And they consistently pay. They pay the 24th of each month for the last bill. So the last minute they pay the bills.
Right.
But they're $5,000 and $6,000 security and drainage bills.
Sure.
So those chunks of money we give to the county to go on the tax roll. if they don't pay that amount during the year, the county then says, well, we're going to just move this to the TEETER program. So the delinquent utilities take 18 to 24 months for us to get our money. Okay?
Because we've had that discussion, you're right.
I think we get the money, I think it's the December 10th payment that they choose to take the money and put it in TEETER. At that point in time, we should get our money in January. Right. I'm waiting for that to show up. The money that is the direct levy that NDS is managing, the Melrose bond, when they don't get their money at the end of the year, they turn it over to the TEETER program. So that money doesn't have a year in limbo while it's on the tax roll. Okay. That money's on the tax roll as a direct levy at the beginning of each year. And then if they don't pay it, then NBS files paperwork to have it go to the TEETER program.
Okay.
So the discussion with that is, do we want to continue to absorb that and accept the risk, or do we want to move it to the county, which requires a year, still at risk, you know, but with the county on the tax levy rolls, but then we know that next year it'll go into TEETER. The county is a multi-billion-dollar organization that's better to absorb those costs than us. I'm not a fan of the liability of accepting that.
Too much like derivatives.
Return on it,
Just move it.
Yeah.
So I think this is one of those things that for the board workshop, say, staff is thinking this. Board, this is what we'd like to do, and if we make the decision for this upcoming fiscal year, that's part of the procedural process. If we need to make it a policy, then it's just rolled into, because it's not going to affect us this year, it's going to be the upcoming budget, and that's when I would do that.
Yeah, well, the policy is to do as we've done, basically.
Right.
And I would recommend we continue that process. So I really don't see a change coming up.
Perfect. Then that's just one of those, here it is, here's why we're doing it, and we move on.
And from my opinion, is when you're dealing with a customer like this, and we've had this discussion, and I'm pretty sure we're doing, this guy's cash only. I mean, I don't care what it's for. You know, you want us to analyze studies, you want us to do this, you want Paul to do that, it's cash. And if we don't leave cash, we ain't doing it.
Period. Well, and again, that if that philosophy or that's what staff needs, and there needs to be a policy or direction from the board, then it's thrown into this budget cycle. And it's just part of what we anticipate for this fiscal year. Here's how we're doing business this fiscal period. Mm-hmm. And just because if we see that activity level, that's something that we haven't seen for a while, then yeah, that's how we're doing business. And then if it works, it's part of our policy and we move on. So.
But I, you know, credit is not particularly good here at the moment. You know, so.
All right, that's it for that item.
Okay, where are we? Director Tabs and staff comments and suggestions.
Thank you. This is what I was looking for, so it explains. I think it'll help the other board members. It just gives us that conversation piece when we kind of get hit up at the plaza on where we at on the budget, those types of things. Everything makes sense in my pea brain, so I feel more than comfortable.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I'm happy camper here. You know.
Just a reminder, Tom's out 2 weeks starting this afternoon, and so we wish him well on his travels.
Thank you.
Okay.
Watch for the sharks.
There we go.
He's not going to surf, are you?
No.
We figured he can outrun the sloths. He can outrun the sloths.
Yeah. That's the old Sierra adage with the bears. I don't need to be faster than bears.
Right. I need to be faster than the last person.
Faster than you.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
We're done.
That makes sense to me.
Thank you.
All right.